The movie Selma only confirmed our understanding of Martin Luther King Jr. as one of the heroes of modern American history, essentially a saint. But it also reminds us that King wasn't always such a figure of universal worship. The movie dramatizes tensions with radicals like Malcolm X who weren't so committed to nonviolence. Here's Malcolm in Selma talking to Coretta Scott King.
You've said disrespectful things in the past, Minister. So you'll understand why there is some alarm here tonight.
I do. I understand that. Your husband and I, we do not see exactly eye to eye on how to achieve progress for the black man. And yes, I have been piercing in my critiques of nonviolence. But because we don't agree, Mrs. King, does not mean that I am the enemy.
What Malcolm X had actually said on the record is that King was an Uncle Tom. Pretty much the worst insult an African-American man, especially an African-American fighter for civil rights, could throw at another one. And yet, Uncle Tom started as a hero, a character in a novel who, in real life, helped bring about the Civil War and the end of slavery. When Harriet Beecher Stowe's book was published in 1852, abolitionism was a political dirty word, an extreme idea. It was Stowe's novel that helped convince millions of Americans, viscerally, once and for all, that black people were human and slavery was evil. So how did things go so terribly wrong for Uncle Tom? KUOW's Phyllis Fletcher has the story.
I know one black person who would admit to me in public that she's read Uncle Tom's Cabin, and nobody even made her do it.
I'm thinking it was probably the third or the fourth grade.
Sakara Ramu is a Seattle area writer. She found the book in her Catholic school library.
There is always kind of a section in the back of the library where there were books that you just kind of knew as a kid were kind of risque.
You never checked them out because you didn't want to call attention to them.
And one of the books for me was Uncle Tom's Cabin.
She could tell from the drawing on the front that it had something to do with slavery.
It made me uncomfortable when I looked at it, and I knew that it had historic significance, and the slavery was not something that was talked about in school. So it was pretty much, you know, the cover. I judged the book by the cover in this case.
She read Uncle Tom's Cabin during library period in the next couple weeks. She didn't tell anyone, even though the book really moved her. So did the character Uncle Tom.
He was extremely compassionate, and he was a transformative figure for the people around him. He was very powerful, even though he seemingly had no power.
What he did in the story was a very brave thing to do. He died to save these women.
That's Carver Gayton. One of the main characters in Uncle Tom's Cabin, George Harris, is based on his great-grandfather, a former slave named Lewis Clark. Stowe wrote that she interviewed Clark extensively when she was researching her book. Clark told Stowe about a man he knew who was beaten viciously by his masters.
And he said, if God forgives them, I did nothing wrong, and God forgives them, I'll forgive them. And that's, if you read Uncle Tom's Cabin, what Uncle Tom said right before he perished, it's almost the exact same, the same words.
He's a poor, miserable critter. It's awful to think of. Oh, if he only could repent, the Lord would forgive him now. He ain't done me no real harm. Only opened the gate of the kingdom for me. That's all.
Okay. If you try to read Uncle Tom's Cabin today, you might end up cringing in the fetal position, rolling your eyes with your shirt pulled up over your nose. It is sentimental. The dialect and some of the scenes are over the top. Some of the characters are crazy stereotypes. And like a lot of things that seem racist now, Gayton says the book is a product of its time.
She said that blacks are, you know, they're meek and they're, you know, they're more Christian than whites, and particularly white males. You know, she was like a lot of abolitionists and a lot of the people of the Victorian era that they were patronizing. They felt as though they were part of this elite class. They knew what was best for black people.
Harriet Beecher Stowe was a New Englander. She was living in Maine with her husband and children when Congress cracked down on runaway slaves. She started to write a fiction series in an abolitionist newspaper about slaves and their quests for freedom. a mother who crossed a freezing river on foot with her baby so they wouldn't be separated in a sail.
The huge green fragment of ice on which she alighted pitched and creaked as her weight came on it. But she stayed there not a moment. With wild cries and desperate energy, she leaped to another and still another, cake tumbling, leaping, slipping, springing upwards again. Her shoes are gone, her stockings cut from her feet, while blood marked every step. But she saw nothing, felt nothing, till dimly as in a dream she saw the Ohio side and a man helping her up the bank.
The man who encouraged them to go? Uncle Tom. Tom had chances to try to escape, and he didn't. Tom was literally sold down the river. On the boat, he saved a slave owner's child, little Eva, from drowning. The child's family bought him. Tom played with Eva and took care of her until she died of tuberculosis.
He made people question how they perceived him initially and how they treated him and how they believed people like him should be treated and what that meant about who they were as people.
And then...
Uncle Tom, you know, was beaten to death by Simon Legree. Beaten to death because he would not give the names of two runaway female slaves.
Do you know? I made up my mind to kill you. I have done just that thing, Tom. Unless you'll tell me what you know about these year gals. Do you hear? Speak! Do you know anything?
I know, Massa. But I can't tell anything. I can die.
I can die, he says. That's pretty tough.
People think that Uncle Tom was like a water-toting...
shuffling, a kowtowing, you know, sniveling coward.
But those people haven't read the book.
I think they're reflecting on a perspective of what transpired, you know, after the book came out.
And I was really surprised when I read the novel that Uncle Tom wasn't really an Uncle Tom in the way that we think of the term today.
Adina Spingarn was in grad school at Harvard when she read Uncle Tom's Cabin.
And I made a note to myself in my notebook, oh, I should look up how Uncle Tom transformed from this Christ figure in Stowe's novel into a race traitor.
She did look it up and wrote about it and turned it into her dissertation.
So the first time that I find Uncle Tom being used in a negative context that isn't specifically rejection of Uncle Tom's religion is in 1883.
30 years after the novel came out.
And that is when a black New York lawyer named Walter G. Christopher gave a paper to an African-American literary society called the Bethel Historical and Literary Society in Washington, D.C.
He was arguing that blacks should go to trade school instead of college. Not a popular argument today, but back then it was part of a hot debate. To make his point, Christopher said,
"Of course, no one wishes to revive the Uncle Tom type of manhood. I despise that as heartily as anyone. But a man who will kick up a row when he knows that he can't win is a fool."
He wanted to distance himself and all black people from a symbol of a painful past.
There was really a long process in which sometimes Uncle Tom could be referred to in a positive way, sometimes in a negative way.
In the early 20th century, Tom was still a sympathetic figure to many northern whites and to many blacks. Black newspapers were publishing new fiction pieces in his voice. And Tom was still a moneymaker. Black actors and white ones in blackface were performing Uncle Tom in plays and vaudeville acts.
It's really in that version that Uncle Tom becomes the Uncle Tom, the passive old cringing sycophant.
That's David Reynolds' take on it. He's a professor at the City University of New York. He looked at how theater companies produced Uncle Tom's Cabin for white audiences.
Most of the play posters portray a bald, stooped man, very arthritic person on a cane, very subservient.
Reynolds says reviewers tended to judge the play on how pathetic Tom was and how dramatically he died. In 1911, a black theater manager wrote in the Chicago Defender that the Uncle Tom plays had outlived their usefulness.
In the 1910s, Uncle Tom becomes a figure for the old kind of leader, the leader who accommodated too much. And that's when Uncle Tom becomes dangerous.
It was basically downhill for Tom from there. Each generation of black writers and activists, from Marcus Garvey to James Baldwin, found new reasons to reject Uncle Tom.
Or pray for those who use them despitefully. Today, Martin Luther King is just a 20th century or modern Uncle Tom or a religious Uncle Tom who is doing the same thing today to keep Negroes defenseless in the face of attack that Uncle Tom did on the plantation to keep those Negroes defenseless in the face of the attacks of the Klan in that day.
Malcolm X said that on TV. A Tom today is someone whose loyalty to white people for personal gain puts other blacks in danger. And if you're Tracy Jordan on 30 Rock, a Tom reminds you of everything corny about white people.
Ah, dude wears khakis. Uncle Tom, party of one. Uncle Tom, party of one.
You can't call someone that if you've never read the book.
What book?
You know what I think? I think you're ashamed of being black and you're an embarrassment to your community.
Poor Tom. He's a punchline, not a happy ending. But another main character, George Harris, the one based on Lewis Clark, makes it to Canada, and ultimately back to Africa.
I want a people that shall have a tangible, separate existence of its own. And where am I to look for it? On the shores of Africa, I see a republic. There it is my wish to go, and find myself a people.
The real guy didn't do that. Near the end of his life, Lewis Clark was destitute in Kentucky. A reporter found out who he was, the inspiration for a major character in Uncle Tom's Cabin. He wrote about him. The article went viral. There were calls for the Stowe family to help him out, but they denied he was the real guy. So Carver Gayton is doing what he can to make sure more people know his great-grandfather's story. He helped with a reprint of Clark's slave narrative, and he's writing another book about him. When he meets people who don't want to read Uncle Tom's Cabin, he wants them to at least know the book's place in history.
People forget about the fact that the anti-slavery movement was on the ropes before that book could come out. The Northerners were not that supportive of challenging militarily, Confederacy, and weren't that concerned about the institution of slavery. But that book changed perspectives.
If you look at it the right way, it could change your perspective even now. You could think of Tom as a hero.
There aren't too many people that I know of, outside of a Martin Luther King, who would put their life on the line like that for other people.
As for Sakara Remu, the writer in Seattle, she's been called an Uncle Tom. She knows it's supposed to be an insult, but she doesn't take it that way.
If I'm an Uncle Tom, that means I am compassionate. I'm making the best out of challenging circumstances. Like, I'll take that.
For Studio 360, I'm Phyllis Fletcher.
So, what do you think? Maybe you're one of the rare people around now who's actually read Uncle Tom's Cabin. We'd like to know your thoughts about the book and what its hero means in America today. Tell us in a comment at studio360.org.